Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Forever 35, a podcast about the things we do to take care of ourselves. I'm Kate Spencer.
And I'm Doris Shafrir.
And we are not experts.
No, but we are two friends who like to talk a lot about serums.
Baby, do we ever. And you know, before we get started, friendly reminder that our website's forever35podcast.com, where we have links to everything we talk about here on the show. Our Twitter is at forever35pod. Our Instagram's at forever35podcast. And the Forever 35 Facebook group is on Zuckerberg's metaverse, where the password is serums.
It's true.
Thank you,
really,
Mark.
You really sold that.
Yeah.
You can sign up for our newsletter at forever35podcast.com/newsletter. We have a new issue going out tomorrow. And if you want to reach us, you can call or text us at 781-591-0390. And you can email us at forever35podcast@gmail.com.
Dory, here we are.
Here we are again. How's it going?
I don't know. I don't know. As we just said, like serums, I was like, I have been like clinging to my nighttime skincare routine as like a sign that I'm doing okay. It's probably a sign that I'm not doing okay. But like last night I was like, here I go, washing and scrubbing. Like, I'm fine. I was like, oh, maybe I'm not fine.
Oh,
I don't know. I mean,
well, there's just a lot. There's a lot.
Oh, Dory, there's a lot.
There is a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, there is. You know, I mean, I've got some stuff going on, health stuff going on that I'm trying to figure out. And then I'm doing what I always do, which is I turn to like self-help books to solve all my problems. I mean, look, everything is chaos. The world is chaos. We're in this Omicron surge, not to mention everything else is wild. So you cling, or at least I do, I cling to things and in the hopes that they might bring me a small sense of comfort in an otherwise chaotic world. And right now for me, that is, you know, like washing my face. And then also I'm reading this book called The Circadian Code.
Okay. Tell me more.
Okay. So someone recommended this book in a circle of women that I'm in. And I was like, this sounds interesting because it's actually some ideas that I have kind of dabbled with, especially when it comes to sleep hygiene. Now, of course, the book is called The Circadian Code, Lose Weight, Supercharge Your Energy, and Transform Your Health from Morning to Midnight. So, of course, there is always a weight loss tack on, which drives me crazy. And I am not interested in that part of things. But I did want to flag for anyone who is hearing me talk about this that that is part of the title that is discussed. But what is more interesting to me is this idea of our bodies being on this kind of circadian cycle that has to do with like the outdoor light that we are exposed to and how that influences us when it comes to bedtime and our sleep health.
Go on.
So I've only just started listening to the audiobook, but what I have gathered from listening to the author's TED talk and kind of talking to friends about this is like, it's not anything revolutionary. I mean, it's like, it's the idea that the exposure to these screens essentially are waking us up. So, and I know that reading this was validating because when I go back out to work, like from eight, if I go to work at 8 p.m., do more writing or work on the podcast or something, and I go try to go back into our house at like 11 to go to bed, I am wired. What is more interesting is like, what if I only used my phone and then possibly all screens from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. and then I was done? What would that look like? How would that impact my life? That would stop me from doing work at night. That would stop me from texting friends like you and, you know, looking at Instagram and all these things. And it just kind of this idea of an hours where my phone is on and hours where my phone is off was kind of intriguing to me. Essentially, intermittent phone fasting.
Okay.
Now, again, am I just trying to cling to something in order to bring me a sense of control in my life in an otherwise uncontrollable world? I mean, probably everything is not a nightmare. But I will say I've been trying this, and it's one, it's really hard to get off your phone at 7 o'clock at night. You probably know this because I've been texting you as late as 9 o'clock. And also I'm just addicted to looking at it. And the way my brain works is like, I think of something and then I'm like, gotta look it up.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But the nights where I have really kind of succeeded at it, you know, I go and wash my face like 8:30, 9 after my kids are in bed. And then I'm like, well, I guess I just got to read and journal because the phone's off limits and it's done. And then I'm tired. And so I'm naturally kind of starting to wind down because I'm not staring at the screen, which kind of keeps me awake. So I don't know, Dory, this is kind of interesting to me. And it's something that I've been thinking about in terms of just my overall like phone health and mental health and all sorts of things. So that's what I've been up to, is hacking the circadian code.
And I feel like, I mean, just based on our texting, it does seem like you've gone to bed a little earlier.
I have. I have been going to bed between, you know, about like 10 and 11 every night. The problem again is that I get sucked into books and then I keep pushing it. So I don't quite know how to mitigate this because I love reading at night, but then I'm like, I've got to see if these humans and this four-armed alien get off this island and make it to, like, you know, I've got a lot to going on in my book worlds.
Yeah, I hear that.
I don't know, like, you are a reader at night, and I know you sometimes fall asleep at night while reading, but how do you, like, what if your body just wants to keep going, or your brain? I don't know what to do. Do you just stop reading at night? Do you read? Like, I can't stop. Once I'm reading, I'm in it.
You know, as you were talking, I was thinking about this, and there have been times, I think, when my desire to keep reading has like overcome my fatigue. But I would say most of the time, I truly get so tired that I start like closing my eyes.
Mm. Even if something like crazy is happening in your book?
Again, like, it does occasionally happen that, like, I'm,
right.
You know, I do feel compelled to keep going. But, I mean, the other thing that I would say is something you could try. I don't know if this would work for you necessarily, but, like, I have at times had, like, nighttime books and morning books. So, like, at night, you kind of deliberately don't read the, like, super compelling page turny, like, you're not reading like the driest stuff. Like, you're reading stuff that you want to read, but it's like, it's not stuff that you're like, oh my god, I have to keep reading. Maybe it's, you know, the circadian rhythm book, which, like, I'm sure is interesting, but like probably not something that you're gonna like stay up for hours reading. And then I personally like to, if I wake up early enough, I like to read in the morning. So maybe that's like a time where you could just take, you know, half an hour to read, because in the morning, like, you have more of a deadline, right? Like,
yeah, that's true. You got
to
get out of bed.
To get up. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay. That's a good thought. You know, it's like a miracle that I'm even reading at all again. Like, there were years where I just was so exhausted and so drained by life that I didn't even read. Didn't read. And so I read a ton of books last year, which felt really good. So I need to figure out how to make it work for me. That's a good idea. I wonder if I could get up in the morning and read.
I feel like you get up early.
I do like to get up early. Although recently I have been getting like 8 hours of sleep and I'm still tired. Like, I could sleep longer. So I've got to just figure this all out. But again, if I'm on my 7 to 7 phone fast, and I wake up at 6, I should be reading. and not sneaking my phone.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, Dory, so that's what is new with me, you know, for better or for worse. That's what I'm kind of focusing on while also, you know, strapping KN95s to everybody's faces anytime we leave the house. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm feeling a little restless.
You know, restless door syndrome?
Yes, restless door syndrome. I'm feeling like I need another project or something to kind of keep me going.
This is interesting. Okay, so you're not like, okay, so you're intellectually restless.
I'm feeling a little intellectually restless. You know, I had started this book project.
Yes.
I don't know. I've been having some big like existential quandaries about writing books. And I'm like, this might be too much to go into on the podcast, but I'm just like wondering really if like writing books is for me.
Wow. This is interesting. That is a big existential crisis because you've written two books. I mean, technically three.
I have
three.
Written two books, right? Yeah. But like, I don't know. I feel like it's something I'm good at, but not great at. And I'm just wondering if there's like, I feel like there are other things that I'm better at. I think I'm better at podcasting than I am at writing books.
Now, does being necessarily better at something mean that you feel like you can't do it?
That's a good question, Kate.
Let's unpack this. Okay.
But I don't know that like writing books actually brings me that much joy.
Now we're getting to the bottom of something here. Okay.
Like, I remember Roxane Gay once tweeted something that was like, so many people want to have written a book, but like, no one actually wants to like be writing the book. Yeah. Do you know what I like? I'm paraphrasing, and I'm sure the way she said it was much more eloquent, but like, there, yeah, of course you want to like have written the book, but the actual writing of the book, like for me, is like not always so much fun. Not that everything has to be fun. Again, like, I feel like we're getting into some like big thorny existential questions, but I am just wondering if like, I don't know. But then I also think about this tendency of mine to like cut and run sometimes when things get really challenging. So then there's that other thing where I'm like, well, maybe I'm just giving up too early. But then I'm also like, maybe it's just not for me. So I don't know, Kate.
I mean, I also think it is okay to be like, oh, this thing that I have done, it's not working for me right now. I'm going to see what else satisfies me. You know, yeah. Just because you've done it and just because you're good at it doesn't necessarily mean you have to keep doing it.
Totally. I just do feel like I do tend to be someone who like doesn't commit to things for a very long time. Like I do tend to get sort of restless, I think.
Like are you the kind of person who if something doesn't come easy to you right away, you're like, I'm out?
Well, I was that kind of person.
Yeah.
And I think I've overcome that.
Okay.
For the most part. And so I think that's what I'm trying to unpack.
Yeah.
Is like, should I just keep going? Because this is something ultimately that I do, like, I think ultimately I do find it rewarding. But like, are there other things that I find more rewarding and that do bring me more joy? And that like resonate with people more. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I do. And for you, that might be making podcasts.
Might be making podcasts.
Or it might be something else.
It might be something else. So, but I also, I do feel like I am someone who like restarts things every few years. And so I think there is something to be said for someone who's able to like stick with a thing. I don't know.
I get it. I what I'm hearing is that you're worried about making the wrong. You don't want to make the wrong decision out of a place of like fear or giving up or maybe repeating old patterns.
Mm-hmm.
But you also want to honor yourself and your truest desires. I know it sounds ridiculous, but that is kind of where what I'm thinking.
Yeah. Yeah. Something like that. I don't know. So I am feeling a little bit at loose ends, I think.
Well, let me ask you this. What sounds fun for you intellectually right now? Not like to do for work, but like what would be stimulating for you? Have you thought, do you have an idea or is that still part of the kind of figuring out process?
I do have some ideas that I'm not ready to talk about in a public forum, but I will talk to you about privately.
Hit me up on the text.
So yeah. Okay. And I think there's, you know, I think I'm also thinking a lot about like just, and this is like semi-related and another tangent. Are you ready?
Yes, I am. This is a really interesting conversation.
That like, okay, lately there's been all this news of like white men starting new media companies and like getting all this money for it. Mm. And I don't want to do what they're doing, but it is very annoying to me that these are the people who get recognized. And I also acknowledge that, like, as a white woman, like, I have a lot of privileges that a lot of other people don't.
Yeah, I mean, we would be next in line after those white men in terms of people who just get shit because they're
white.
Yet
there's been, as far as I know, there has not been any news of white women doing this and getting funding. Like, there's just, it's just been white men. So there is a part of me, because I think there is also a part of me that like is a shit stirrer, as I think you know.
I have a sense of this, yeah.
That I'm like, well, fuck these people. Like, I want to, you know, I don't know. But again, like, I don't want to do what they're doing, but I also want to annoy them. Not annoy them. That's not what's motivating me. But I think what I should say is it annoys me that these are the people and projects that get recognition.
I hear you.
So that's also kind of like floating around in my head.
I do think you are a person who craves mental stimulation. Like, you like a challenge and you like respond to figuring stuff out and solving things. You're a good leader. I mean, there are so many things that I think would feed that fire inside of you. Look, I grew up watching a lot of Oprah and it never left me.
Well, thank you for channeling that.
You're welcome. I mean, I think it's really interesting, you know, and also like this kind of, there's so much disruption right now. I think, you know, in the last 2 years, it's just been kind of like, well, you know, I mean, we're seeing like workers are quitting their jobs at an insanely high rate.
Yeah.
People, you know, are starting, you know, there's been strike. Like, it's interesting. There is kind of this hopeful shift that might be coming through this pandemic. I don't know. It's hard to find hope in any of this, but.
Totally. Totally.
Well, Dory, I think that this conversation kind of ties in nicely with talking to our guest today.
I agree, actually, Kate.
Do you want to share Winter's bio with everybody?
I would love to. Digital pioneer, early adopter, and creative professional, Winter Mitchell started working in Silicon Valley when she was just 16. A high school dropout by choice, Winter now owns her own business, working with celebs, influencers, and brands, and consults on digital campaigns, strategies, and solutions to support product and brand launches and overall content development. She has an incredible ability to identify trends and hot topics in current affairs, popular culture, fashion, music, and technology. She's currently co-curating the LA Phil Humanities Festival. I mean, that is so cool. As a journalist, she has over 10 years of experience covering premieres, celebrity interviews, press junkets, as well as breaking exclusives with investigative and source reporting. As a podcaster, Winter has produced and hosted two shows, Pop Rocket and Waiting to Exhale, and has another two shows in development.
You know, I first met Winter when we were both like entertainment reporters on the like press junket circuit.
Wow.
She has truly worn a lot of professional hats and is like excels at everything she does, I have to say. It's just an observer.
She's so cool. And I loved our conversation.
Yeah. I mean, I think we should flag that we do get into pretty intense conversation about pregnancy loss.
Yes. Thank you for flagging that.
Yeah. So I just want to give a little heads up for anyone listening, but we just had a really open and vulnerable conversation. It was just so wonderful. Winter is amazing.
All right, so we're going to take a short break and we will be right back with Winter.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
You know, one thing I think is really kind of interesting about skin, my skin, but all skin, is that like what it needs now in my 40s is not what I needed in my 30s.
Totally.
Definitely not what I needed in my 20s.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But like, how are you supposed to know what your skin needs?
It's hard. It's hard to know.
Especially when there's just like so many products out there, the overwhelm is real. It's a struggle to even know how to get the results you want, what products to start with. This is why we're super excited to partner with Apostrophe. Apostrophe is a prescription skincare company that offers science-backed medications that are clinically proven to help. I have used Apostrophe. I love it. They will pair you with a board-certified dermatologist who literally creates a personalized treatment plan for your skin. I have done this a few times now. It is so easy to do their online consultation. You upload photos. And like within a few weeks, I had done the consultation and received my treatment plan and my product.
Amazing.
And that is how I became a tretinoin gal. I love the tretinoin that they sent me. I love their sunscreen. Both products have been amazing on my skin. And you, Forever 35 listeners, can get a special deal from Apostrophe. You can get your first visit for only $5. That's at apostrophe.com/forever35 when you use our code forever35. Now, that is a savings of $15. I like that. This code is only available to Forever 35 listeners. So to get started, just go to apostrophe.com/forever35 and click Get started, and then use our code FOREVER35 at sign up, and you will get your first visit for only $5. Thank you, Apostrophe, for sponsoring this episode.
I think it's safe to say that we have suffered through bras. We've been uncomfortable in them. We've devoted whole episodes to finding good ones. But I'm here to say enough is enough. Enough. I've drawn the line.
Have I ever told you what I did in college when I needed a bra to wear with a fancy dress?
What?
I cut the top of pantyhose and then I duct taped that to my chest.
Oh, that sounds uncomfortable.
Because I didn't have honey love when I was in college.
No. Well, we are here to say no more being uncomfortable. With Honey Love's bras, you will wonder why it took so long to make something so comfortable and so supportive. There's no underwire, but through some kind of wonderful magic, they managed to not sacrifice lift, all while making it in a fabric that's so comfortable, you barely know it's there, especially the crossover bra. I wear one of these almost every day. I'm wearing one right now because it's so comfortable and it easily fits into my life. But if you like a breathable and versatile legging, Honey Love has you covered on that front too. Plus, they have tanks, shapewear, and their V-bra that has molded cups, still without the underwire, to keep you from getting that dreaded uniboob effect other more relaxed bras tend to give you. So treat yourself to the best bras and shapewear on the market and save 20% off at honeylove.com/forever. Use our exclusive link to get 20% off, honeylove.com/forever. After your purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them, and please support our show and tell them we send you. Treat yourself to Honey Love because you deserve it. Okay, here we are with Winter Mitchell. Winter, welcome to the show.
I'm pumped. Thank you both. This is just an honor and a privilege.
Oh, no. The honor and privilege is truly all ours.
It
because
is.
Because you are an icon.
Please, you're the icon.
Oh, come on.
Look at your hat.
Dory, you've got a cute strawberry hat.
You've got
on.
A strawberry hat that is wild, and I yeah. love it.
You know, I've just not really been feeling my hair lately.
Okay, fair.
So here we are.
I mean, hats are pandemic hair's best friend.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just say, you know, like we're all just doing what we can. We're putting stuff on ourselves just to hide it all away for
100%. I've never felt that more, Kate. Jesus.
And I don't mean to sound like we should be hiding our, you know, our bodies or, you know, like minimizing ourselves, but there is just something where it's just like, oh my God. I don't know if it's the, you know, the continuous staring at ourselves in Zoom, the feeling of just of monotony or whatever it is. But I appreciate you, Winter, saying that because I don't want it to seem like it's body negativity.
No, I don't think we're pushing ourselves away. I'm so glad. First of all, I'm so glad I'm doing this show today because I feel like this is a conversation I can have with both of you and you'll immediately get it. I have spent the last 2 years learning more about what I look like, how I feel when I'm looking the way that I do, whether I feel great about my body or not, and how to enhance. Because the feelings, this doldrum of the pandemic has really festered and sort of, you know, where I felt like, this is going to sound crazy, I have learned through the pandemic that I am, while you've met me, you know me, I'm definitely extroverted and I've lived my life the entire time I've been here for 41 years as an extrovert. I'm actually not into the public. I'm actually just not that into the general public. And it's because I have before the pandemic, for the first 39 years of my life, I have allowed myself to be assigned whatever aesthetic I've been told in passing through my journeys, through school, through interactions at work, blah, 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 blah. And I've always felt like I'm somebody who has my own identity. And I've become more fashionable. I've become like my taste palette was always present, but I am now like way better at fashion, way better at makeup, way better at dealing with my hair than I've ever been because I've just had time to like learn about myself and what I like and not caring about trends. So some that also includes like a lot of baggy sweatpants and stuff in between the little fashion items, but I don't care. I don't care anymore. That was a rant.
No,
no, it was great. We have follow-ups.
Yeah, I'm curious, like, how kind of your self-perception of yourself has changed over this time?
One of the things that bugs me a lot about the body positivity movement is that, and this is controversial and people can write letters directly to me. Do not send them to Kate and Dory. Please send them to me. This is a reflection of my thoughts, not theirs. I didn't realize how much I'd taken like my youth and my health for granted for all those years that I had my youth. I've had a lot of regret about not embodying a more like consistently healthy, state of mind. I kind of felt like I could wing it and I can get away with it. And now I'm like way more conscious of like what I put in my body. I take like 10 vitamins. I feel, and I'm mad at myself for waiting this long to adopt these habits, drinking more water, doing more things like that. But then like, I wish that I felt like those people in the beginning of the pandemic who were walking everywhere that in my neighborhood went away real fast. I feel like after a month, like by April 2020, people were like, okay, so we're done with that. But it's made me, that was great. And now we're moving on. I just definitely feel like a deeper connection. And I mean, Dory and I have talked about this. I had multiple losses over the last 2 years. And that was a critical scenario that also brought me back into my body in a way that I just was not. Because beforehand, I was always running around, doing a bunch of things, going from client to client, trying to make it happen, trying to be on the scene. And it just wasn't a thought in my mind about pregnancy. And I just wasn't thinking about it. And I also felt like, you know, my mom's fertile, my grandmother is fertile, my sister's fertile, like I'll be fine. And just to sort of hit that infertility track, like hard. And it wasn't like one loss and then a few months. It was like one after another after another. And it was just so traumatic for me that I had to really reassess, like, what am I doing? Like, where am I? Like, I'm 41 now, I'll be 42 in a month. Like, what is this? What is my legacy? What is my plan? What are the options? What is this? What does my husband want? Is he like, what the fuck, this chick, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, and he's not, thank God. But it's like, those are the things you're thinking about. Like, those are the things you're thinking about. And, you know, it's been, since the last one was in September or October. So like ever since then, I've just been like, I'm just going to not put pressure on myself on any level, but I am going to be healthier. I do want to live for a long time. I do want to look good while living for a long time. And I would say that it's like a twofold thing. Part of me has done it because it makes me, I don't have a baby, but I can have Fendi. And a part of me is also like, another part of me is like, but you need to be doing this because this is, you know, here's an opportunity. I don't know. That's a long-winded answer. I'm sorry.
No. It's, you know, it's, you raise a really interesting point, and it's something I have found challenging. And this is separate from talking about your pregnancy loss, which I think we both would love to talk to you more about. But
yeah, totally.
This idea of how do we remove this idea of like weight loss and the like diet complex, diet industry, essentially, out of the idea of health? Because like I texted Dory today, I got my blood test results back and my cholesterol is really high. And I was oh shit. Well, one of the biggest things that you can do is to change your diet. But how can I do that in a way? Like, can I pick what I eat that isn't related to me obsessing about my food in terms of my weight? And I don't know, but it's confusing, right? The older we get, the more we are trying to focus on longevity. Like, I don't want to go anywhere either.
Winter, we kind of like just got right into it.
Yeah,
we do usually like to start by asking our guests about a self-care practice that they have, and I feel like we've, in our discussion so far, we've like kind of tangentially approached some things that have to do with self-care, but I'd love to hear if you have something specific that you are doing lately that you would consider a self-care practice.
I know you told me this beforehand and I needed to be set up for this. Oh, yes. Okay. This is a good one. I started like growing my nails. And taking care of my nails. You listeners, you can't see it, but they just look like your average nail. But they're
long. No. I noticed your nails immediately and almost really nice. Was going to be like, whoa, what nails you've got. But then I was like, that's a weird thing to say.
Well, the thing is, I was a nail biter for the first 15 years of my life. And then after that, I would only bite my nails when I was really anxious. So I would grow them and then I would immediately start biting them down to the quick. And that went on for a long time. And only in the last year and a half since we've been in this have I learned to control that. And that feels very, I'm very proud of that because I was an aggressive nail biter, skin biter, hangnail, you know, all of that, bleeding middle fingers, all of that stuff. And I just said, this is one thing like I can do every week is just, you know, put some polish on my nails. I use Essie. I like Essie a lot. I like OPI a lot. I put nail oil on it. You can get any kind of orange generic nail oil and just moisturize it. I got like a whole kit, like a nice one from Sally's, not like something that you buy at like a 99 cent store, like a whole thing. And I moisten my cuticles. I just do all of that. I bought myself a steamer to steam my face after that and give myself facials. I bought myself one of those wands, those electro wands that buzz on your face and zap zits. I basically replicated everything minus laser. If I could buy a laser machine and put it right here in my office, I would. Just me self-administering laser peels. No, but other than that, those two things, I bought everything to replicate because I also said, like, unless it's like extractions, I don't really need to go see these people for these things. I've been doing this to myself for years and I feel pretty good about it. So yeah, if it's not like a surgical or non-surgical thing, then I just do it at home. That's self-care for me. That makes me feel so good.
Oh, I love that.
And how did you stop? So I'm a nail biter and actually like a month ago, I went out and bought a million oils and have been oiling my cuticles and trying not to bite my nails. Was there something that helped you in the process of stopping biting your nails?
I think I noticed how I talk is like this. And I kept seeing myself talk like this. I'm just trying to plug in my computer. I just kept seeing myself talk like this and talking to people. And I was like, oh God, I got to start pulling that back together. So then that's how I stopped. But the reason the nail biting started is because I was hypnotized at 5 to stop sucking my thumb.
Wow.
So I moved to nail biting because I was hypnotized to stop sucking I was sucking both thumbs. And my mom Kate, I don't know if you follow me, but Dory follows me on Twitter. I talk about my mom all the time because she is wild.
she sounds fun.
She's very fun. She's a boomer, but she's a hippie. So she was a hippie. So that makes all the difference. But my mom like took me to a surgical place, not a surgical place. It was like a doctor's office. It didn't even look like crunchy. That's what was so crazy. You walk in, it looked like a normal office. And what I remember is the room was stark white, like a white room with the chair in the middle, a TV VCR combo. And the woman said, okay. And she pushes you back into the chair and you have the light on you. She puts the thing in your mouth to prop your mouth open, like one of those mouth things. And then she turns a video on of just people's teeth looking crazy and talks to you while you're doing it. And then I would leave. That would do that 30 minutes a week for 4 weeks. And she called me and said, Winter, my mom answered the phone and said, Winter, it's for you. And I get on the phone and it's the lady. And she's like, you're going to stop sucking your thumb now. And I was like, okay, I'm going to stop sucking my thumb now. And I never sucked it again.
Wow.
My mom clockwork oranged me to stop sucking my thumb.
That is wild.
Wow. Okay. Oh my gosh. Well, I don't think I'm going to do that for nail biting. What's fascinating is that the oral fixation remains, right? Like, it's so interesting that these parts of ourselves, like, you just found a different hand outlet.
Yeah.
Well, I also quit smoking too.
Ooh,
so I quit smoking and I quit biting my nails. That was hard.
That's quitting smoking hard. Is tough. Wow. I'm impressed. That's amazing. That's good inspo.
Yeah, that is really amazing.
Yeah.
Winter, We would love to just talk a little bit about self-care kind of as it relates to your work with celebrities.
Yeah. Can you give our listeners kind of the abridged version of your current career? You've had an amazing,
yes,
you've had an amazing career path.
I'm a digital strategist. That's a fancy word that I created for social media manager, because I feel like social media manager seems basic. I do more than just media, social media, manage the social media. I work with talent and celebs, to help manage the persona, the perception, the reception, of their social platforms, and also do like behind the scenes sort of like brand and image consultancy from a digital perspective. So like brand connecting people with like brands and connecting them with like, you know, other consultants who can help do things that are like, you know, involved in social impact. And so like my clients are all across the map. I've worked with J-Lo and Aerosmith and Margaret Cho and Wanda Sykes. And I started working with Olivia Munn recently, who's a good friend of mine. And I work with Goldman Sachs and National Geographic. Like, it's all across the map. It's like, it's been pretty great. I've really, really, really enjoyed sort of where I've ended up here. I'm underplaying it. It's abridged, but it's, I know I've done great shit. I can talk about it for a long time, but yeah, that's currently what I'm doing. And I'm doing really well at it. I'm really blessed.
Yeah, you're good. You're really good at your job. Also,
thank you.
my question. So our question is like, do you have any takeaways about self-care or wellness that have come from your work with celebs, whether it's things you've learned from them or like boundaries you've set?
Yeah. Or what not to do.
Yeah.
I gotta tell you that the self-care, it runs the gamut. I would say that I think the most monumental experience was working for J-Lo, because I know these people exist in the world, and there's several of them, but she to me is like one of the last big movie stars in the sense of like this. She really has adopted like this golden era persona, even though she's still current to this day. Like, it's very much like, you know, when you watch Mommy Dearest and she's like, every single thing is planned out and plotted down to the T, because that's how she operates. That's literally J-Lo. And it's inspirational in that sense. I wouldn't say the entire experience was inspiring. I definitely feel like there was a lot of stuff left on the table. But as far as like understanding like how to be in the world when you're perceived as a certain way, meeting that level of expectation, you have to operate as one does. And she is like meticulous, hardworking, will outwake anyone. I mean, I was out one night working and was like about to pass out by 5 a.m. and she was still wide awake. Like, this is somebody who like is on a meticulous schedule of being like, the business of J-Lo is not simply just waking up and being, there's like a whole thing. And I realized working on that team, a lot of things that I was leaving on the table about myself and what I needed to do. And, you know, one thing that I think is really important is just, and it's not like, yes, she has resources to do all these things, but like really actively wanting to be in good total wellness and shape, like actually wanting to have that and making that a part of your day to day is just something that's critical for her. And, you know, I felt like, you know, that's one of the reasons why I bought my Peloton, because I was like, I'm not going to go outside anymore. Then I need to have something here to be doing that. So that's like a critical aspect of like how I work out. What happens when you work with celebrities is that you're exposed to a level of excess,
right,
that you did not know was a thing, right? Yeah. And it's like excess and access. And so it's like, I may not be able to afford it, But I will still find a way to get something like that or as close to it as possible or find a way to access it or work towards it. And that's sort of like, that's 100% what I've taken away from my experience working with celebrities who are particularly fashionable, right? Like who have like a degree of like relevance because they're very fashionable and look good. And that's something that I'm like, you know, in terms of like being, I'll compare it to this. When I was 25, like my beauty kit was a kit. It all fit in like a little thing. If I was doing well and had enough money, I would go out and get Makeup Forever, which is my favorite brand for a foundation. If I wasn't doing that great or in between jobs, it was CoverGirl. Or it was a sample that I made somebody make me. And now it's like I have a closet of like products and it's seasonal and it's equipment and it's items. And it's just like, my husband's always like, are you going to clean this out? Or like, why do you need four of these things? And
we know why.
we
get it.
We get it. Yeah, I know you do. Mm-hmm. And that's just, I have to have like five different kinds of perfumes. I have to like, that is to me, the thing that I've taken away is like, these people enjoy having stuff, which sounds gross and gaudy. And by the way, I feel guilty about a lot of this stuff. I do. I've felt guilty this entire pandemic. I've made more money the last 2 years than I've ever made in my life. And it's by the grace of just sort of the nature of the pandemic. People they want to be online more. They have to be online more. They need people who are experts. And I mean, nobody talks about it a lot, but I will. I'm aware that people hire me because I'm Black, because it looks good for them. After George Floyd, the inquiries like skyrocketed.
Wow.
And, you know, I thought about it and I was like, And then I was like, you know what? My ancestors would want this for me. I want to make money. And I feel guilty about it a lot. Like I knock on wood, it doesn't stop, but I feel guilty about it. But it's allowed me to sort of splurge on things that I never would have beforehand.
Right.
All my favorite. I went as far back as to buying perfumes that I could barely afford when I was 18. I bought that Gucci Rush and I bought a big bottle of it. And I said, you know what? That was for the 18-year-old me who was like begging my mom and dad to get it for months because I wanted it and kept just going down around to different Macy's in San Francisco and collecting samples. Mm. And that's, you know, I think that's, I can see how the people that I work with are probably feeling the same way. It's not excess to them because they went so long without and fought so hard to get there.
What a lovely gesture to your past self, who is still which is still a part of us all. But that's such a lovely gift to give that version of you. I don't know. That's really beautiful. And you smell good now. I mean, you always smell good, but you know what I mean. And you get to have that scent.
I have like my signature scents all over. Like I'm very about fragrance. Fragrance is like all I'm about right now.
Well, and you know, I didn't realize this about you, but until I was reading your bio, but you dropped out of high school at 16, quote, by choice to go work in Silicon Valley. And that's a massive decision to make as a 16-year-old. Or maybe it's not. Maybe you knew. Maybe that was, I would love to just hear what that was like for you and how it's shaped who you are now.
I was a great student. I was an ADHD student. I was in the GATE program and, you know, I could not be tamed in that sense. But I think the critical moment is that I was involved in an online relationship with an older man when I was 14. And my parents, when they figured it out, were understandably like horrified. And that threw me into, I know I just threw this out at you guys.
Yeah.
And that sort of spun me into a trauma phase where I just was like, I don't know what my future's like, but I don't ever want my parents to think that any decision that I've made was a poor choice. Mm-hmm. And it was a choice that was, they were very shocked. I was very shocked. I absolutely did not anticipate that happening. And the internet was so new. This is like 1994. By the time I got to 1986, after everything had been exposed and everything had gone on, I did not feel like I can be in a school space. I just did not feel like I felt it was actually a matter. The reason I did it is because I felt guilty. I felt like I put myself through so much by sort of going into this thinking I was smart enough to not know I was being manipulated and preyed on, that I said, I want to prove to my parents, and I feel like I need to prove to them quickly that I'm capable of, my life will not be messed up. I won't be messed up. So I went and got this job by telling them I was 18, and it was writing for a website that was owned by, it's now IGN, but it was owned by this a startup company that was building IGN. And I just started working there after school to start. And my parents were like, oh, where are you going? I was proving to them that I was responsible. I'm going to work, and then I'm going to my after school job. And then because they thought I was 18, they asked me if I wanted to work full time. I was like, absolutely. And so I tested out of school and I just started working at this job, and I kept working there. And then I got a job at NBC, and they also thought I was 20. I was really just 18. And I just started working there and making them think I was 20. And then I got a job at another network, and they thought I was 22 and I was 19. So I kept not telling people my true age, because I felt like I presented older, which it was so not true. And by the time I got to 21, I was like, I got 3 jobs under my belt. I'm going to go move to LA and work in the industry. And that's what I did. And I never stopped. I just never stopped. I never thought about school. I never thought about my friends. I mean, we're all still friends, but I just never thought about any of that stuff because I just didn't want to be there. I wanted to be out in the world. And I still to this day have 0 regrets about it. I have 0 regrets about it. I don't recommend it. I'm just saying I have 0 recommend.
Yeah.
The things I got away with back then were purely because the internet was so like it was just, nobody was going to actually take my birth certificate, go down to the city records and compare. Like there was just none. It was still back when like IDs were paper IDs. Like there was just no, I wouldn't recommend it now, but like, I don't care. I don't care. I think I'm one of the last few people who got away with that. Dory.
No, I'm just like processing all the stuff that you're saying.
Yeah.
It's also, I mean, I feel like I've mentioned this before, but it is always interesting to interview like people I'm friends with on the podcast because like I'm learning so much about you that I didn't know.
Okay, well, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back. It shouldn't be so hard or expensive to find furniture that exudes elegance, sophistication, and a touch of luxury. And we're happy to say that today's sponsor, Article, makes getting quality furniture as easy as checking the pieces out online. Thanks to their online-only model, they have some really great manageable prices. Article believes in delightful design for every home, so you can get to creating a space that truly reflects your personal style. I now have a space that is quite outfitted in Article, and I have to tell you how not just like seamless, but truly enjoyable the ordering and shipping process was. It was extremely fast. It's affordable, very convenient because I got to pick the delivery time, and they sent me updates every step of the way. It was like they knew that I was an obsessive checker on shipping, and they were like, we see you, we honor you, and we're going to support that journey for you. As Dory knows, I have a beautiful bench from Article right when you enter my home. Gorgeous planters. And then my favorite, my kind of like surprise favorite piece from Article are the blankets I have gotten for my sofa that my family all hogs, including my dogs. My dogs love these blankets so they're like throws on our couch. The dogs try to monopolize them.
Dogs are such blanket hogs.
They know a soft blanket when they see one, I gotta say. So their endorsement, honestly, their endorsement says more than mine ever could. That's how soft these blankets are. Article has all kind of curated furniture from mid-century modern or coastal to industrial, Scandi, boho. So no matter what style you're leaning toward, they have got something for you. I mean, you could really do like every room in your house in a different kind of style if you wanted to. And with Article's team of designers, no matter what piece or how many, you're sure to find the perfect balance between style, quality, and price. Article is offering Forever 35 listeners $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more. To claim it, visit article.com/forever, and the discount will be automatically applied at checkout. That's article.com/forever for $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more. All right, we are back.
I would love to talk about your whole fertility, infertility, IVF journey. Yeah. I know you and I talked about this, as you mentioned. It must have been a couple years ago now. Mm. Because I think we talked about it in person.
Yeah.
Wow.
And, you know, I want you to share kind of whatever you feel comfortable sharing.
As you can tell, I'm very comfortable sharing lots of things. Okay.
I think this is something that a lot of our listeners have struggled with. I know, especially for us, because we have a chunk of listeners who came over from Excellent Adventure, which is the podcast I do with my husband about IVF. Yeah. So could you tell us a little bit about what this experience has been like for you and where you are with it now, both like in actuality, but also like mentally? Because it's so much to just like wrap your head around at all times.
It started with us actively wanting to have a baby, and I got pregnant really quick. And I just remember being super excited and, you know, enjoying knowing that this process is happening and looking super forward. I'm talking about the first time, looking forward to like this baby, like we're going to have a baby and we love each other. And it was like right at the beginning of the pandemic and we were still having the best time of our lives and still like really enjoying one another. I mean, we still do, but it's like, you know, it's 2 years into a pandemic. And the loss itself basically was that my egg did not split the way that it normally would. And my baby had a number of issues, cystic hygroma, trisomy 18, or sorry, trisomy 21. And, you know, the decision to terminate for medical reasons was not taken lightly. I was very, there was just immediate shame. Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, back to my story about dropping out of high school. I've always been chasing like shame, right? Like not trying to be shamed for who I am or shamed for things that I believe in. I've always, you know, been trying to just evade shame, and it just hangs over you when you are susceptible to that feeling your entire life. And I immediately jumped. We immediately jumped into trying again, and it happened again. And then we paused and I said, you know, we'll try again. And in the course of this, I just felt like if it happens again, after everything I try, the supplements, the eating better, doing this there again, then I have no choice but to go into IVF. And it happened again. It was an accident the third time. We were in Mexico having a good time and I got pregnant. And that's when I was like, the anger really came out. And the anger is more, is not about at myself. The anger really stems from like having to deal during a pandemic with this, you know, I feel bad for first responders. I obviously sympathize with them, but our healthcare system is a nightmare if no one hasn't heard. And period. And being a Black woman trying to have a baby, not being able to bring my husband into the room, not having protection from the stupid bullshit that doctors say, trying to track down my doctors. I had to schedule my own termination this last time because my doctor was like, I'm sorry, I just got your message. I was on vacation. You know, like shit like that. Like it's just a basic mm-hmm. lack of care and consideration because you've chosen to not move forward with something that is harmful to you emotionally, harmful to the baby physically. Like you want me to carry a baby that might not live. You just want me to like wait till it's convenient for you. I'm sorry. Like mm-hmm. there was a lot of that, you know, the first time it was like, it was the beginning of the pandemic and it was like a sense of sisterhood. I had an all female group of doctors. The only person that was a man in the room was a nurse. Everybody was surrounded me with light. You know, that didn't happen every single time you go to the doctor.
Yeah.
And you have to do a lot of yelling, screaming, and crying to be heard.
Yeah.
I'm doing IVF now. I haven't started my process because as I got to the finish line of the first, you know, pre-process, my doctor stopped me in November and was like, I need you to lose weight. And, that upset me.
Yeah.
Because why are there so many barriers to me getting to my baby?
Yep.
And why am I being punished? Because I spent the last 10 years of my, or the last 20 years of my life working to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't going to do, again, the shame comes in. I wasn't going to go and be flagrant. And this is me, again, speaking my truth. Everybody's entitled to their own, but I wanted to be married, and then I wanted to have a baby. And I wanted to marry somebody I love, not just some dude, just to fulfill something. And I got the guy that I love, and I got the marriage that I want, and I got the love that I want. So why? Because I was late as a 38-year-old bride. Am I feel like I'm being punished? So there's a lot of like questioning God and not trying to be mad at God and not trying to be mad at these people who are obviously overworked, but they're paid very well. So I'm not going to say underpaid. You know, I want to just be able to have a baby. And so many people I know had babies so effortlessly and continue to. And I have to work every day not to be mad. And not to be mad at them and not to be angry or disappointed in myself. I have to work every day just to be.
Yeah.
And I this is morbid, but like I kept the ashes for all my babies because I just didn't want them out in the world, you know? I didn't want them out in whatever system, the system that's making me mad. I didn't want this system to have them, and I didn't want it to be treated like I didn't care. I care about every single one of them deeply. I love them. I miss them. I miss what could have been. But there is something real, 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 real. And can we curse on here? This fucked up about storing your children's ashes in your office next to your desk in your Sonos. When I just wish they were here. And, you know, a part of me is, you know, my husband has a son and he has an ex-wife and, you know, she hasn't made our lives very easy at all. And there's just, you know, it creates resentment in me that there exists this other person, and it creates resentment that I never expressed to my stepson. Cause I wish, you know, one of the issues my husband has is negotiating his relationship to him and the ex-wife. And that creates like that, you know, that encroaches. So I try to be a good stepmom, but there's resentment in everything when you're trying to have a baby. There's just, it just, you never know when it will unfurl.
Right. Right. It's such a fucking, it's a mind fuck.
all of this, you're right. Like, the thing you said about trying not to be angry every day, it's like, I feel like I would go between like trying not to be angry and then just being like really angry and just like letting myself be angry, because like, what else are you going to do? Sometimes you just have to like feel the things. But that's also exhausting.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's why I've been shopping.
Yeah, yeah, I hear you. That is really insane that your doctor said that to you. And like,
yeah,
there are REs who are not fat phobic.
Yeah.
And I
let me know if you know some. Yes, I am. I was actually thinking about writing her a letter and just letting her know, because she used to be my OB. And I'm really surprised that she said that. And it threw me into a cycle that I've been trying to get off that cycle for weeks now. It's actually really fucked up. She said that. It's okay.
You should, if you are compelled and you have the emotional energy to do that for that person, that is a real, like, gift you give that motherfucker, because
I'm not a Karen, but when it comes to letter writing, I am the queen Karen. I am. I'm a good ass letter writer. It's almost litigious with suggesting litigation without being litigious.
Okay, I like it. I mean, that itself sounds like a form of self-care, though, because you get to you get to speak for yourself without interruption and without being censored, and that sounds actually very powerful.
Yeah. It's the one thing, I'm a writer, so it's the one thing that I appreciate about myself, which is funny because I was in I don't know, Dora, you might be in this group. I was in the binders group and I like responded to somebody and she told me that I was the subliterate. And
my God.
No, but it was like, to me, not everything, I'm not going to just pull out the race card, but it's also, it's slightly racially tinged, because it's just like the most awful thing you can say to someone, but but subliterate, it seemed very out of left field for the conversation we were having. And this to me is like proof of strength, because 5 years ago that would have broken me. But the strength I have created surrounding these losses that I've had to, look, I cried, but the day of my loss, that I was told that the baby wasn't going to, like, the genetic counselor was like, the baby's not okay, or, you know, if you want to terminate, let's start working on that. She told me at 11, by 11:15, I was live on Instagram. By, you know, that a week later, I was at a rock concert. You know, like, I 2 weeks later, I went on a trip to Portugal for work. Like, I am resilient. And it comes out in little ways, you know, that my resiliency is strong. And that to me was like, she called me subliterate. Fuck you. I'm not, you know, you're just mad because I was right. And this is how you choose to engage. But there is strength in what I have been through, because I have learned about women that I would have never met otherwise. The sisterhood of women who want women to be mothers is something that I have found and embraced. And I can only tell you that the loneliness is that, you know, a lot of my girlfriends don't understand, and I haven't been able to talk to them about it. And I don't want to talk to them about it. Because I don't really want, nobody's opinion can really help or shape what this experience is like, unless you've been through it, unless you've been on a table 3 times and woken up in another place 3 times and gone home and, you know, bled for days, and then, you know, thinking that you're going to be okay, then the march towards week 12, and then the march towards week 15 to have surgery. It's like, it's unlike, I don't recommend it to somebody I'd hate. It's not fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
I'm hoping for the best. I'm hoping for the best.
Yeah. And we're hoping for the best for you and too.
I'm so grateful for you sharing both, like, just selfishly for myself yep. and deepening my understanding of your experience, but also for anyone listening. I just think it's been really powerful to hear you share your life with us. So thank you. You have our gratitude.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, Winter, I wish we could keep talking. It really feels like we've been talking for like 10 minutes.
And I know. I was like, so was this good or was this therapy? I don't know. I hope somebody something from it.
Oh,
that's do we want to talk about lipstick? I don't know.
I feel like sometimes they go hand in hand.
When we have these like amazing, intense conversations, like we get to the end, we're like, oh, we didn't ask about any products. But it's just like, that's kind of just like where the...
It's what this podcast is. It's
where
wild.
The podcast muse led us today. Yeah. So
put them in the show notes. Put them in the show notes.
Oh, yeah. That's a good idea. Yeah.
I mean, you did also tell us to oil our nails. So I do feel like on a superficial product level, we've gotten it. We nailed it.
Okay, good. Good.
Winter, where can people find you if they want to kind of follow along with you?
I live at Twitter. It's called Twitter. At Winter, WYNTER, Mitchell, MITCHELL. That's the best place to find me. That's usually where I'm hanging out. That's like my stoop.
Okay.
You're there.
All right. Well, thank you again. And this is great.
Oh, thank you guys. Thank you, ladies. You both are great, and I really enjoyed listening to the both of you, and I'm honored you had me on.
All right. That was Winter.
I don't know. I just really loved our conversation so much.
I did, too.
It was really... you know, it reminded me, just listening to both of you talk about IVF and trying to conceive and hearing about Winter's experience and grief, is like really how much, and I don't mean this in like a mean way, but if you haven't experienced something, I'm not a person who's experienced any of that. And you really just have no idea, you know, and it's hard when it's on people to share their stories to have to illuminate things for the rest of us. But it felt really important to get to listen to her and to you, because it's just not something I've experienced. And sometimes we just have no clue what an experience is like.
Yeah. I mean, I think that this is what empathy is, right?
I hope so.
You know? I mean, I think you have like really opened my eyes to the experience of losing a parent, which is like not something that I've experienced.
Well, thank you. So. I mean, I kind of hope that is what this whole podcast is ultimately, right? Like, even though it is fun to talk about skincare and that's how we started, hopefully it's just we're working towards becoming more empathetic people. And
yeah.
And hopefully listeners are too. Oh, my goodness. Well,
this has really been an intense episode.
It has. But you know what? Emotions run high. I mean, we are feeling people.
We are feeling people.
You know, we've got to, I don't know, just got to experience it. I think it's good to talk about. Even though we're all in the kind of like weeds of this stuff, it still, I feel like, never gets talked about. So. Mm-hmm. Let's transition to the intentions of the week, because I am curious about yours, because you did a double intention, meaning you repeated.
I did. So my intention was to clean out my office. I have made some big progress on this front. Yesterday, I took out two trash bags. Sorry, I'm like screaming. Yesterday, I took out two trash bags of stuff that I cleaned off of my desk and my office. I sold some stuff in a local purge group. So that's been good. So it's definitely not done, but I feel like I'm like, I've made progress, and I've like actually worked at it. It hasn't been something that I've just totally abandoned. So I'm feeling like reasonably good about it, actually.
Congrats.
Thank you so much, Kate.
That's so exciting. What a great feeling.
Thank you. And then this week, you know, I think I am just going to kind of lean into the restlessness and explore what that means and really think about what you said.
I'm going to ask you the most annoying question, but have you been journaling at all about this? And would that help you?
I mean, I'm still doing my one line a day journal, but I'm not really, it doesn't really leave room for.
Like, I wonder if you did some morning pages, if this might kind of like get your brain juices flowing, or maybe morning pages would be fucking annoying.
I don't know. Maybe or maybe not. It's an interesting idea. I'm not dismissing it out of hand.
To be continued.
To be continued. Oh, there's one more thing that I just want to mention. I just want to give a shout out to the members of the Power Zone Pack Challenge, the Forever 35 team. We voted on a name for the team, and the theme of the challenge this time around is Cosmic Zones. So everyone was supposed to choose a name that had some sort of like space or, you know, planetary reference. And someone suggested Dory's Space Hotel.
Dory, I'm dying. I died at this. I literally just rolled over.
And the team voted to make that the name, which like I just thought was hilarious anyway. But then something got lost in translation. Either the head of our team had a typo when they submitted it to the Power Zone Pack people, or the Power Zone Pack people like read it quickly and just like typed it wrong, but it is now the team name is now Doreen's Space Hotel. Which is just funny to me, because as I think I've mentioned on this show many times, like people always misspell my name. I'm always asked if my real name is like Doreen or, you know, something else. Especially growing up in Boston with like all the Irish people, Doreen was a very Irish name. And so it's just very funny to me. Anyway, shout out to all the Doreen's Space Hoteliers, as people are calling us. Anyway. Just a little sidebar there. Kate,
I love that. Yes.
How is maximizing reminders going for you?
Okay. So I have gotten kind of very into my Apple Reminders app. I haven't really dug into this, and I actually would like to sit down and maybe do this weekend, because what happens when I get so panicked about work, I stop looking at my to-do list and I just kind of like flail. So I need to take a beat and revisit this, I think. TBD, this week, my intention is to try to stick to getting off my phone at 7 o'clock at night without feeling guilty about it, because this, and I think this might be very specific to like Gen X and maybe also millennials. I don't think Gen Z has this problem, which I'm happy for them. The second I got my first full-time job outside of college, I worked, you know, part-time from high school on, but my first real full-time job, I've always felt guilty if I didn't like work all night or wasn't available all the time. And that's carried over, you know, and I don't know if you also feel this, but like this feeling of like, if I'm not constantly available, I'm letting people down. I'm not doing my job. I'm not doing a good job. And that's part of this boundary setting with my phone, is this kind of like lingering perception that if I'm not constantly able to work, I'm somehow not doing a good job. And again, I don't think you Gen Zs out there, I don't think you have this. I think this is a real product of kind of how we were taught and the people we worked with and bosses and et cetera, you know, of our generation. And again, I'm glad that you're breaking free from this, but yeah, it's a beast. So getting off my phone without feeling guilty. That's my intention for the week.
I love that.
Well, Dory, this has been a real treat. Everybody, thanks for listening. And as always, we like to remind you that Forever 35 is hosted and produced by Dory Shafrir and Kate Spencer, produced and edited by Sam Junio. Sammy Reed is our project manager, and our network partner is Acast. And we look forward to podcasting with you later.
Bye.